Welcome to episode number 25 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. Today, we are going over pyrimidine synthesis, what I miss about the Caribbean, food edition, and oxygen dissociation.
Okay, first we're going to talk about the oxygen. Now, let's go to de novo pyrimidine synthesis. Because we did the other one before. Okay, so we talked about purine synthesis, which is the other one. Let's talk about pyrimidine. So, first, just to jog our memories, purine was adenosine and guanine, so ATP and GTP. You know what, let's back up even further than that. Just to make sure we really remember, we're talking about DNA, the rungs in the ladder. So we have that double helix formation, and then if you kind of like picture it like a ladder you can climb, we're talking about the rungs. And actually, we're talking about one half of the rung. So adenosine would be the A that matches up with thymine. Or uracil. It's the A and the T, the A and the U, the C and the G, all those matching up. So the A and the G are purine, the U, the T, and the C are pyrimidine. And just so that we remember, when we talked about purine synthesis, we also talked about ATP, which is the same A, the adenosine, as in the DNA. It's just that we've added the TP is triphosphate, so we've added two phosphate groups. And that's how, like, that's our sort of, like, I think I called it the Bitcoin of energy. It's how we use most of our energy is used in our body. GTP is another big one. So those are the purines. Again, ATP, GTP, purines. Now, the U, the T, the C, those are pyrimidines. And pyrimidines are not as complex as purines because purines, if you remember, they had the double ring. Pyrimidines only have one. So that's less complex, but now we have UTP, TTP, and CTP. So we have three different end products that we need. If you'll remember, ATP, or AMP, I guess, technically, matches up with the A matches up with the T. It gets really old to say all that. The A matches up with the T in DNA, but then we replace the T with the U, uracil, in RNA. So DNA uses thymine, and then RNA uses uracil. So they all need to be able to work together. I don't actually know why we replace it, other than that it does get replaced, and knowing that that is pretty important. I don't actually know why we replace it. There's a lot of questions I have like that that doesn't seem like anybody really knows why it happens. They just know that it happens. And that's why medicine is kind of magic at times. So, first step, we're going to put together a glutamine, which is an amino acid, and a carbon dioxide. And this makes a carbamyl phosphate. And that is done by something called carbamyl phosphate synthetase 2. There's this carbamyl phosphate synthetase 1, so that probably sounds familiar, but that is completely unrelated. That is actually the urea cycle, totally different thing. So glutamine and CO2 go together, making a carbamoyl phosphate done by, we just abbreviate with CPS2. But although knowing what CPS stands for kind of makes it a little bit easier to remember, because what is carbamoyl phosphate made by? Carbamoyl phosphate synthetase. So then carbamoyl phosphate goes through some additional reactions to make the ring, but honestly, it's not high yield. It's not even in first aid, for instance. But what we end up getting, what ends up getting put together is actually an aspartate, and that's another amino acid. So then we add some stuff and, We make the ring, and that gets put together with an aspartate, which is an amino acid. So carbamoyl phosphate goes through some additional reactions to make the ring, but then ends up getting put together with an aspartate. And I think I made it sound like that carbamoyl phosphate got turned into the aspartate. So I apologize. Okay, so we put the ring with the aspartate. This is called orotic acid now. Then we add something called PRPP, which I don't think I can actually pronounce what it stands for. That's why we just say PRPP. And we add it by using UMP synthase to make UMP. What does UMP stand for? Uracil monophosphate. So we've already made our, you know, like our first part of the DNA. Well, I guess RNA for that, but, you know, this is our first pyrimidine. Now, to back up one moment before we go on about how cool it is that we made a UMP, let's talk about adding that PRPP to the orotic acid using UMP synthase. So, and I repeat these steps a lot, a couple different ways, because I really want to make sure that it's clear what I'm talking about. So, make sure you know that step, though. So, a deficiency in that UMP synthase, so putting the enzyme that puts the orotic acid and the PRPP together, a deficiency in that means that you have orotic acid and PRPP and they can't go together. That causes something called orotic aciduria. And it's an important disease to know for classes in STEP. And what it presents with is obviously excess orotic acid. You're going to see that in the urine. You're going to have megaloblastic anemia. I don't know if you know this. Megaloblastic anemia actually comes from not being able to make DNA. That since we can't make the DNA or the RNA that we want to, our RBCs, our red blood cells, end up getting really big. And another thing that causes that to happen, that doesn't allow us to make our DNA the way we want to, and then we end up getting megaloblastic anemia, is B12 or folic acid deficiency. So, since B12 or folic acid also presents with megaloblastic anemia, the way a question is going to be, a question about this orotic aciduria is going to be presented, is they're going to call it megaloblastic anemia, which does not respond to B12 or folic acid. Okay? So, since we can't make our pyrimidines, we can't make our RNA or DNA, and that's how all this megaloblastic anemia and, like, orotic aciduria happens. Cool? Quick side note, orotic aciduria can present very similar to something called ornithine transcarbamylase deficiency. If you're not a student right now, you could totally be tuning this out. You probably flipped it off earlier when we started into the whole orotic aciduria. Actually, you might have flipped it off at the beginning. Or at least fast-forwarded. Okay, so quick side note, orotic aciduria can present very similar to ornithine transcarbamylase deficiency or OTC deficiency, but don't let it fool you. OTC deficiency has the orotic aciduria, but it does not have megaloblastic anemia. And it also does have, I phrased that a little weird, didn't I? OTC deficiency does not have megaloblastic anemia, but it does have hyperammonemia and a decreased blood urea nitrogen. Those are two clinical correlates that they're going to ask you about and try and mix you up on those two. All right, let's go back. So now we've got our UMP, our uracil monophosphate, and it can be turned into either UTP for RNA synthesis because that's what, you know, it ends up getting attached as. Once you have UTP, you could also throw glutamine, that amino acid glutamine, on it, and then it actually converts it to CTP, also for RNA synthesis, or DNA. Well, okay, no, you can't do that for DNA. You actually have to take another step, use ribonucleotide reductase to make DCTPA for DNA. So it's just, it's just reduced, essentially. It's deribolized or whatever. So why can't we use ribonucleotide reductase to make DUDP for DNA synthesis? Because we don't use uracil for DNA. However, we can still make DUMP, which then gets acted on by thymidylate synthase. Really important here, cofactor is methyl-THF, which needs dihydrofolate reductase to reset. And this turns DUMP into DTMP, which gets phosphorylated to DTTP for DNA synthesis. holy crap, I forgot just how nerdy it is to talk about biochemistry. That got real, real thick, real quick. Well, hopefully you enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure at this point the only ones left are the students. If you're not a student, good for you for sticking it through. I hope that all made sense.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. So I've been thinking a lot about food lately because I really like eating. And I'm pregnant, so I really like eating. And then just trying to think about the foods that I really miss from the Caribbean that I would really want to bring back. And start, you know, maybe cooking and trying to figure out how to recreate them here with the things that we've got. So as we were kind of mentioning before, the food in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, what kind of went into two different camps, based on their colonialist background, right? So we had the camp of the African-based dishes, and we had the camp of the Indian-based dishes. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this before on this podcast or not, but I spent an entire year living in India once upon a time in a different life ago. And those are the tastes and the flavors that I connect with the most. And those are, I love Indian food and all of these Caribbean dishes. I think they were always my favorite. The two that come most to mind are roti, which is kind of like the curry burritos or the curritos, and doubles. And doubles were like this chickpea curry in these kind of fry bread shells. They were almost like curry tacos. Oh my gosh, how did I never think of this until just now? So those are kind of my two number one favorite things. And tomorrow I'm going to try making doubles. I found some recipes online. And so I'm looking forward to trying some of that stuff out. I've got some canned chickpeas because I'm being a little lazy and I'm not going to rehydrate my own. And trying to work that out. I've got, it's got curry powder and then some things that aren't in regular Indian cooking that I tend to remember is that it's also asking for nutmeg, which is a really big Caribbean spice. So I'm really looking forward to that. So hopefully I can perfect this recipe. It comes with my favorite when I was there is that it would come with a tamarind sauce, like that it would have pepper sauce, which was super spicy, and then tamarind sauce that was really sweet. And so it had that sweet, spicy, delicioso sort of thing going on. I couldn't find any tamarinds at the local grocery store. I know I'd be able to find them if I went to an Asian market or a Mexican market. But I didn't feel that great today, and so I just went to one grocery store. And what I ended up picking up instead to substitute that was a sweet mango chutney. So I brought it home and I was tasting it. I think it's going to do the trick to have that kind of sweet, sour flavor going on. But someday, I promise, I will be a big girl and I will make my own mango chutney. I was being just a little on the lazy side today. So I'm looking forward to trying that tomorrow morning. Chicken wings. Granted, you can get chicken wings anywhere in America, but these are, I don't know, the Caribbean chicken wings are something special. And I think primarily because they were always done over charcoal fires as opposed to propane or done in the oven. So chicken wings, I think, are going to just end up being kind of forever for me and Micah a staple summertime thing. And, okay. And so now on to drinks. They had the best ginger ale I've ever had. That the American based company ginger ales just don't hold a candle. And especially with, I occasionally with my pregnancy have been getting some nausea. Not bad by any means whatsoever, but every so often just a little bit. And I really wish I could have that nice spicy Caribbean ginger ale. It was so good. And then, let's be real. I miss the rum punch, but I'm also missing most booze at this point in time. So, and I think it's a big sad thing that I was missing good wine when I was there, and then I haven't really been able to drink any since I've come back. So someday I'll be able to drink wine again. But yeah, rum punch. But I'm pretty sure I can figure out the things to be able to make that here as well. So Indian based food and ginger ale are kind of the big main things. I'm probably going to regret the doubles a little bit tomorrow. I have been getting a lot of heartburn, but I think it's going to be so worth it. So that's what I've got for you today. Thanks. Hope you enjoy it. We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
Okay, this is actually something that I worked on with the physio class today. This is the oxygen dissociation curve. This is nerdy. Let's get nerdy. We're going to talk about it. So this is how blood knows when to pick up oxygen and when to drop it off. So this is how it knows to pick up oxygen in your lungs and to drop it off in the tissue. Red blood cells are filled with hemoglobin. We've talked about that structure before, so I think you remember it. If you don't, I think that's enough that you need to know. It carries it on the heme. It carries the oxygen around. And so one thing we track is how saturated the blood is with oxygen. And this tells you a lot of things about how the blood is using oxygen. So what we do is we plot it out in a graph of pressure versus saturation. Did I say that right? Pressure is going to be on your x-axis. Saturation is on your y-axis. I think, yeah, pressure is a function of... No, saturation is a function of pressure. I think you say the y first. Either way, pressure is on the x, saturation is on the y. It's actually going to be a percent saturated. We're talking the not your blood pressure, but the amount of pressure of oxygen. We call it the partial pressure because it's a gas. But how much pressure or essentially existence of oxygen is in the blood versus how much is saturated on the hemoglobin. And if you plot that out, it gives you sort of this sigmoid curve. And this shape is because hemoglobin has four binding sites, which is kind of a really cool concept that when it picks up one, that binding site, when it picks up an oxygen, it actually causes the hemoglobin to change its shape slightly, which makes it easier for more oxygen to get added. So the more you add, the more you want to add. And that's how it can kind of pick up much more quickly. One big thing we look at is how much oxygen is needed for 50% saturation. That number is usually 26.7 millimeters of mercury. But we can compare that to, and we compare that standard to like other situations kind of to help us understand them. So for instance, what does it mean if that number goes down? That means that it takes less pressure for oxygen to bind to hemoglobin. So that whole curve is going to shift left. So where do we want less pressure for oxygen to bind to hemoglobin? That makes it easier to pick up, right? We have less pressure, more saturation. We're picking up quicker. Where do we want it to be easy to pick up oxygen? The lungs. We want a hemoglobin to grab all the air, or all the, I say air, I'm better than that, all the oxygen in the lungs that it can. So like what things in the lungs cause this to happen? Increased oxygen saturation is the biggest. The fact that there just is so much oxygen is the biggest. Also, it's an increased pH. It's a higher pH. Okay, so what if we want the, or what if we make that number, that 26.7 millimeters mercury, go up? That 50% saturation go up. Then what happens? There's actually a decreased affinity or an unloading of oxygen. It's going to take more oxygen to saturate to 50%. So we're dumping it off. And where do we want that to happen? The tissue. What causes it to happen? Well, decreased pH, aka increased carbon dioxide. One of our biggest things that causes, or the biggest source of acid in the body, is carbon dioxide. Also decreased oxygen saturation, which is kind of self-fulfilling, you know. Since we are low on oxygen, it causes us to want to dump oxygen out, essentially. Other things that can make it unload quicker: elevation, temperature increase. Actually, real quick on elevation, we were talking about this today in class, and I thought this was really interesting. I thought it was interesting when I first learned it. I still think it's interesting. So when you are in a high elevation, the air gets thin, is what we say. We call it thin air, right? But what that actually means is that there's not a lot of oxygen for you to breathe up there. And I think the tendency to think is that like altitude sickness is caused by low oxygen. Well, it is and it isn't. So this is what's really cool, I think. Because there's low oxygen, you're going to be breathing more quickly to try and bring more on board, right? Which is a pretty understandable response. But because you're breathing in so quickly, you also breathe out so quickly, which means that you're actually expelling a lot of carbon dioxide. Because you're expelling so much carbon dioxide, that's causing you, the pH of your body, to go up. Your pH needs to be between 7.35 and 7.45. Once it goes above that, you are actually in a state of alkalosis. And that state of alkalosis is what causes altitude sickness, or that's what altitude sickness actually is. I think it's kind of a neat idea that it's not actually the loss of oxygen that causes altitude sickness. It's actually the loss of carbon dioxide, even though we are losing carbon dioxide because of oxygen being in short demand. So that's the oxygen disassociation curve. If you're a student, you should definitely know that. And if you're getting ready for like NBME physio, make sure you can read a graph on something that you have no idea what it is ahead of time. But you should, if they give you a graph, you should be able to read it and be able to answer some basic questions off that graph. I actually thought I knew how to read graphs pretty well because, my word, come on, they're graphs. That shouldn't be hard. I had to learn a few things. All right, hope you guys enjoyed the oxygen disassociation curve.
All right, there you have it. That was episode number 25 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. That was pyrimidine synthesis, what I miss about the Caribbean food edition, and oxygen dissociation. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wu Ya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.